away from yourself. Can you run away from yourself? Can you run away from yourself? Must have done,
must have done
something wrong.
Something wrong.
Said you must have done,
must have done.
Oh, something wrong.
Something wrong.
Why you came by the place where you belong?
That's Bob Marley with Running Away. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Friday, April the 19th, a day that greeted residents of Boston and suburbs to its west, particularly Watertown, Newton, Waltham, and Cambridge, with orders from the governor, the mayor, and the police to stay in their homes and off the streets, away from their schools and their businesses and places of work. Terror was in their midst, and the city was being locked down for their safety, they were told. Watertown was the first to get that message. The still of the night gave way to a fierce shootout between a small army of police and federal agents and the two men the FBI had identified just yesterday as suspects in the Boston Marathon bombings on April the 15th. One of them was killed there, fatally shot by police and possibly wounded as well by explosives either on or near his body. The other suspect managed to escape, and the search continues for him. Here are police officials explaining the violent events leading up to the early morning shootout with the suspects and asking the public to cooperate with the lockdown.
At about 10:30 last evening, a robbery took place at a 7-Eleven in Cambridge. Subsequently, after that, an MIT police officer was shot on campus and has expired as a result of his wounds. There was a carjacking that took place as well in Cambridge involving a Mercedes SUV. That car was ultimately discovered here in Watertown and pursued by the Watertown Police Department. The pursuit went into a residential neighborhood not far from here, where there was an exchange of gunfire between Watertown police, MBTA police officer, and two suspects in this SUV. During the course of that pursuit, several explosive devices were discharged from the car at the police officers. In the exchange of the gunfire, we believe that one of the suspects was struck and ultimately taken into custody. A second suspect was able to flee from that car, and there is an active search going on at this point in time. An MBTA police officer was struck during that exchange of gunfire and is currently at the Mount Auburn Hospital in critical condition. There is an active search by tactical teams from NEMLAC, from the state police, and the Boston Police Department. The Watertown Police Department are involved in this search, as well as traffic diversion throughout the area. The most important message that we are doing right now is for public safety and the safety of those people in that neighborhood. We are asking everyone to shelter in place for the time being, not to leave their homes. If they see something suspicious, other than a police officer coming to their door, they should call 911 immediately. We also want to forewarn motorists that are traveling through this particular area, even though we're locked down in this neighborhood, that they should not stop for anyone and pick up anyone along the side of the roadway. What we're looking for right now is a suspect consistent with the description of suspect number two, the white-capped individual who was involved in Monday's bombing of the Boston Marathon. He was. We have a picture, a video from the 7-Eleven in Cambridge last night that he is dressed in a gray hoodie-type sweatshirt. He's a light-skinned or Caucasian male with longer brown curly hair. You've seen the picture. You all have it. That's the individual that we're looking for at this moment.
That's suspect number two.
That's suspect number two, the white-capped individual.
Suspect number one was shot then?
That's correct.
So suspect number one was the one the FBI
I just want to be clear. We will do regular updates to this, but right now we're in a public safety mode here. Our immediate concern is for those people in the neighborhood up there. We have an active search going on by tactical teams to locate and apprehend this particular individual. He should be considered armed and dangerous and is a threat to anybody that might approach him. So please, use extreme caution and stay in your homes. If you hear something, if you see something unusual, we'd like you to call 911. Now I'm going to ask Chief DeVoe of the Watertown Police Department to just briefly describe the area, the neighborhoods, and the streets that are involved up there so everyone is clear on that.
What's your name?
We're going to let Chief DeVoe, so we're going to go to the speakers, please.
What's your name?
I'm calling on the Watertown community to be calm during this time. We're talking about the East Watertown, Dexter, Laurel Street, School Street area, to remain in your homes. As the Colonel said, we're going to be going, doing a search. Please stay in your homes. Do not come out. If you get a knock on your door, make sure we will have uniform officers there to assist with the screening and the safety of these neighborhoods. Again, the Watertown community has been always very good. We're asking for your cooperation again to assist us during this difficult time.
And there's going to be a control blast of some sort over in East Watertown?
No, there's no planned control blast of any sort at this time. There are EOD or explosive ordnance teams that have been up there that are in the process of recovering anything that was discharged from those vehicles. So we're making those safe at this point. Some of them went off, some we believe did not.
Do you know how many?
We're not prepared to talk about identifications. That was one of the reasons that those videos were released earlier yesterday.
Where were they shot?
I'm not going to get into specifics about that. We don't have the names at this point.
This is an ongoing investigation. We can't get into details on the descriptions of the suspects or the names. We're trying to get information out to the people who live here that they should stay in their homes and not open their doors unless police officers are there. There's a 20-block perimeter around the location the Chief DeVoe just talked about. We are concerned about securing that area and making sure that this individual is taken into custody. We believe this to be a terrorist. We believe this to be a man who's come here to kill people. We need to get him in custody. One thing that I just want to say is that there have been two police officers, one killed and one badly injured tonight. Our sympathies go out to Chief McMillan, who has a severely injured officer in the hospital, and to Chief DeFavre of the MIT police, and to the families of those officers. This is a terrible tragedy. We don't want to increase it. We want to be very careful of what we do here.
The hunt continues for Zokhar Tsarnaev, 19, who is believed to be still in the Boston area. He reportedly is a registered student at the University of Massachusetts, Dartmouth. The dead suspect, authorities say, was his older brother Tamerlan Tsarnaev, 26 years old, reportedly an engineering student at Bunker Hill Community College, who took a year off to train as a boxer. CNN today quoted sources as saying that the brothers are Chechens from the Russian Caucasus region. They moved to Kazakhstan before coming to the United States several years ago. CNN also is quoting an official in the Central Asian Republic of Kyrgyzstan as saying that the brothers were Kyrgyz, had Kyrgyz passports, and that they used those passports when they applied for green cards in the United States. Many refugees from the Caucasus conflict received passports from or refugee status in surrounding countries. I'm now joined by Dr. Gerald Horn, who holds the John Jay and Rebecca Moores Chair of History and African Studies at the University of Houston. His research has addressed issues of racism in a variety of relations involving labor, politics, civil rights, international relations, and war, and he has researched and written extensively on these issues. Thanks, Gerald, for being with us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Thanks a lot. In the initial situation, great care has been taken to say that the suspect's Chechen backgrounds were not linked or are not linked to the alleged bombing of the Boston Marathon that killed 3 people, wounded 176 others, including 13 who lost limbs. They had lived in the United States for quite some time, and so far there is no evidence that they had been radicalized, and I stress that word because that's the word that I've picked up a couple of times. They have not been radicalized, I've heard several experts say, which of course implies a more than tacit recognition of a connection between radicalized Chechens and political violence, such as bombing. What would the connection be? And assuming that there is such a connection in this case, with either or both Chechen suspects being radicalized, why would the United States be the place to express that radicalism?
Well, first of all, you should recognize that Chechnya had been the scene of a very violent insurgency that had been characterized as a so-called Islamicist insurgency. Right now, Chechnya is rather calm. But you should know that during the height of that insurgency, approximately a decade ago, the regime in Moscow under Mr. Putin had come down on Chechnya with an iron fist. And that had helped to engender this diaspora of Chechens to the four corners of the planet, including the United States of America, because as you also probably know, Washington, as far as we know, did not officially support this insurgency, but Washington certainly informally and rhetorically supported this insurgency, which helps to shed light on why those who may have had connections to such insurgencies were able to get visas and passports to the United States. As you probably know, Washington has been playing a double game with regard to this question of so-called Islamic militancy. On the one hand, it is against it. It uses drone warfare to attack it. On the other hand, for example, as we speak in Syria, it collaborates with those insurgencies. Indeed, if you go back to the Cold War era, the contestation between Moscow and Washington, I'm sure you recognize that then U.S. National Security Advisor Zbigniew Brzezinski, serving under Jimmy Carter, recognize that the religious card was very useful to play against Moscow, since if you look at the population, particularly of Russia and not least of the former Soviet Union, you will find a very heavy percentage of Muslims. And whipping up religious chauvinism amongst this population was seen as a very neat idea. This dovetailed with the parallel effort going on in Afghanistan, where beginning in the 1970s, Washington began to collaborate with these forces. That helped to attract Chechens to the banner of the United States. And over recent years, you have found Chechen warriors collaborating with various so-called Muslim insurgencies in Syria, in Bosnia, in Afghanistan, and throughout the world, indeed.
I know that the media usually refer to such people, especially when you're talking about this conflict, they're called ethnic something or the other, meaning Muslim. So these would be ethnic Chechens.
Well, there's some question about that. They may have been born in Kyrgyzstan. They may have Chechen roots. They're probably Islamic. Press reports indicate that in terms of social media, there are various references to religion and their Muslim faith embedded in this kind of media. But in any case, this question of ethnicity is something of a muddle in the United States. I mean, for example, we routinely, or at least some routinely in the United States, refer to Euro-Americans as Caucasian. Well, actually, these gentlemen, these suspects, are actually Caucasians. They're from the Caucasus.
That's correct.
So, I mean, this is a muddle when we start talking about ethnicity and trying to pin that label, but I guess that's what we're locked into.
I said it in recognition of how, in media coverage, how people communicate racism very nicely. They would call them the ethnic Serbs or the ethnic any ethnic community to actually say these are white people, but they are Muslim. So I wanted to ask about if indeed the Chechens have a problem with the Soviet Union, principally, what's their beef with the United States? I mean, what, especially now?
Well, we can only speculate at this point, but in terms of past patterns, we do know that those who have shared a trench with Washington in recent years have felt that Washington has not done enough to support these particular insurgencies, be they in Chechnya or elsewhere. Although, for example, if you look at this episode that took place in October 2002, if I recall, at a Moscow theater, where Chechen rebels took hostage theatergoers, about 800 altogether, and the Moscow authorities basically rushed the theater and supposedly unleashed gas in the theater, leading to the deaths of scores, including rebels and theater-going patrons alike, you'll find, in terms of U.S. media, that U.S. media was actually sympathetic to the rebels. In fact, U.S. media, mainstream media, that is, and probably some left media, too, given what country we're in, basically said that Moscow had staged this whole event. That was followed a couple of years later by Chechen rebels seizing a schoolhouse in Beslan, Russia, and hundreds were taken hostage, and scores again, including pupils and teachers alike, were killed. And once again, you saw a sympathy on this side of the Atlantic to the rebels, although I thought the United States didn't like what was defined as terrorism, that is to say, violence inflicted against innocent civilians. So there has been a very strange relationship between Washington and Chechen rebels over the years. And again, to repeat, if this story pans out, you may come to find that these particular suspects were disappointed with the response of Uncle Sam to their insurgency. And, of course, you cannot discount the other factor, which is that oftentimes when those of this particular persuasion actually reside in the United States, they're turned off by U.S. society for various reasons. They're turned off by racism. They're turned off by Islamophobia. They're turned off about the rampant bourgeois materialism of the United States, and oftentimes that leads to violent reactions. But of course, I don't want to pin that label on these particular suspects as of yet.
Sure, and same here. We're just anticipating, because the word radicalized had cropped up at least three or four times, and I said, well, that's a clue as to where this is going, and it's a good idea to head it off at the pass. Chechens had brokered some kind of a tenuous agreement with Russia in 1996 as a republic. What is the status of that relationship with Russia now?
Well, it's calmed down. Basically, it's calmed down because Moscow came down on Chechnya with an iron fist. It basically, as the saying goes, they burned down the house to roast the pig. And this is very curious. Although we're talking about this latest iteration of insurgency in Chechnya, you may recall that the famed Russian writer of the mid to late 19th century, Leo Tolstoy, actually lived in Chechnya, wrote quite a bit about Chechnya, and in fact had warned the Moscow authorities about poking a stick into that hornet's nest that was Chechnya, because it would lead to very disruptive stings on Moscow. And certainly that has been unfolding in recent years, although, to repeat, things seem to have calmed down because of the rather draconian tactics that were employed in Chechnya. But in a situation like this, you can always expect that sooner or later things will erupt once more.
Now, we don't know, and we're both clear about that, we don't know where this is leading or what may come of this investigation when this particular episode ends. But if it does include the angle of Muslim involvement, the attack on the Boston Marathon, for example, would be the first time since 9/11 that we have an Islamist, a decided and open Islamist attack in the United States since then. Would this be something that you think is possible?
Oh, Well, yes, it's possible. I mean, of course, press reports indicate that Al-Qaeda has been weakened in recent years. But as I said, the problem is the United States plays a double game. On the one hand, it unleashes drone attacks against so-called Islamists in Afghanistan on the Pakistan border. On the other hand, it collaborates with them, be it in Syria or be it in Libya in 2011. So as long as it's doing the latter, it's breathing new life and revivifying this so-called Islamic fundamentalism, and therefore it will continue to be an issue going forward. That's clear.
Well, what other concerns do you have as the situation continues to unfold? What should we be paying attention to, and what should we have a heads up about?
Well, this has been a very tumultuous week, not only with regard to the Boston Marathon, which is still playing out, that is to say the bombing, the Ricin attacks on Senator Wicker of Mississippi and apparently against President Obama in the White House, the destruction of this ammonium fertilizer plant in West, Texas, which apparently is not so-called terrorist-related. The jury is still out with regard to that. You may recall that before these current suspects in Massachusetts were located, it was thought that the Boston Marathon bombing had something to do with domestic terrorism. We know that this is the week when we mark the rather sad anniversary of the bombing of the federal building in Oklahoma City. We know that this is the week when we mark the anniversary of the killing in Waco, Texas, of David Koresh and his religious followers, which outraged many on the right. Speaking of which, we also know that this is the week when some mark the birthday of one Adolf Hitler. And I think that we in the United States, including, I would say, on the progressive movement, have really downplayed the rise of right-wing white radicalism in the United States. That'll take another conversation as to why it's been downplayed, not least on the left. I mean, but for example, to cite one example amongst many, the Los Angeles Times just a few days ago ran a very interesting piece on the so-called sovereign movement, which the LA Times says has perhaps tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of members. These white rightists do not recognize the authority of the United States government on any level, that is to say federal, state, or local. They engage in violent confrontations with the police authorities. And if you were paying close attention before these suspects in Massachusetts were fingered, you might have noticed that many of the U.S. authorities were thinking that the marathon bombing was coming out of the white right movement. Going forward, I would urge and encourage our friends, particularly in the progressive movement, to pay more attention to this phenomenon, because it's deadly serious, to put it mildly, and if we don't pay attention to it, it may pay attention to us in a way we will not appreciate.
Well, thank you very much, Professor Dr. Gerald Horn, and it's good to connect with you after all these years.
Ditto.
Thanks a lot. We'll be talking again soon. Thank you so much for your input today. Well, we'll take a break and we'll come back and continue the conversation right after this.
Never mind thinking this burden is the heaviest. Never mind thinking this burden is the heaviest. Tell me,
who feels it, knows it, Lord?
You're listening to PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. This is Lead Stories. And by the way, you can always connect with me at Lead Stories, L-E-I-D Stories, at gmail.com or on Facebook at Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. Well, by the way, we are taking your calls and comments at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. We've been talking about issues in covering this from the marathon on. We've been talking about things and the importance of putting things into proper context. It is an awful situation that is unfolding before our eyes, but it would be a real disaster to just go where you are guided, as opposed to having some kind of a point of reference as to what this might be all about. I always say there's more to the literal translation of things. You know, you see something, it is a rare thing that it is just that or only that. It is usually something more to it. And so I'm interested, based on what we have been discussing, how media operates, what the coverage has been, how is it going, how is it striking you, what messages are you getting? 888-874-4888. But when I heard that word of radicalized, I knew that intuitively, of course, I knew that there was a particular direction already decided. People are going to be leaning toward that question. And this may very well be a case of two guys, two brothers who had their own issues. We don't know. We don't know what the situation is. So we wouldn't want to jump to conclusions about what this is all about. Let us wait and see how it goes, but let us do so in a very, how should I say, educated manner. Hello, Ron. You're on the air. Hello, Ron?
Yes. Can you hear me, Utrice?
Yes, I can.
Okay. How are you feeling today?
Fine, thank you. And you?
I'm good. But I'd like to make a little rebuttal to what Joe Hahn said.
Yes.
My radio was on. Okay. He made a statement about sovereign citizens, right? And there's an article.
He made a statement about what? I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Sovereign citizens?
Sovereign, yeah, okay.
All right. And there's an article just came out about how the government views sovereign citizens. And they talk about people who are putting, they have this thing called a paper terrorist. In other words, if you put in paperwork into the system or into the court system, that is terroristic in their eyes. Basically, you must, in order to not appear to be a sovereign citizen, you must get a lawyer to defend you, right? So, and some other things that they say. That basically what I'm saying is that we cannot just take the government's opinion of things and then, you know, put them out there. I understand what he's saying, and to a point that's correct. But then, you know, you really have to dig deep into the undersides of what's going on. You just can't take things on face value and then put them out into the community like that.
No, but there's no doubt. And there's no argument about the fact that white ring, what should I call it? Just craziness is growing.
Oh.
We've had the Southern Poverty Law Center. We've talked about that here. These movements, these right wing and ultra right wing movements that are popping up and are even in the mildest form, issues that people are now, arguing about the Second Amendment and gun rights and so forth. You're seeing a movement. There's radical right. There are people who just, this is the secessionist movement, for example, and other movements that are questioning authority, governmental authority. I don't think that it is unique to our time. It's usually, I mean, I could see where as far back as the United States was a country, there have been splinter groups that have been violently opposed to whatever exists as the order of the day. So we just have to monitor things. This discussion today is about reminding us that as this particular situation goes on, it should be placed in proper context. We cannot depend on major media to do that for us. So we will have to be reminded to be on guard. And that's really what we're saying.
I understand. I understand that, but what I'm saying is that what his statements were straight out of the government documents, what they have on their website as what to what. In other words, what I'm saying is they, you cannot let them define, all right, what who is and who is not a threat. When I say, because we don't know who the threat is. I mean, we don't, whether it's inside or outside, this is unknown.
No disagreement here. Thank you, Ron, for calling. We have Sarah. How are you? I'm getting a lot of feedback. Is somebody's phone open? Probably. Okay. Somebody, hello? Is it on speaker's phone?
No, I'm not. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes, I can hear you well, but I was getting a lot of feedback. Go ahead.
Okay. Greetings to you, Therese. What I was going to say also with Dr. Horn and his analysis of who this individual is, what I'm seeing, Therese, is that they are still trying to make this stretch to a Islamic, a Muslim connection, because they are alleging that these boys came out of Chechnya. We don't know if these boys were practicing Muslims, if they were affiliated to any mosque. Nothing has come out saying that they were religious or anything like that.
Yeah, but they've also said, I mean, the reports that I've heard have been very clear. They in fact, they actually said it several times. There is no link at this time between, don't make any assumptions that because they identify them as Chechen is just mm-hmm. their identity, their nationality, and that's
exactly.
why they identified them as such, but not in the context of a Muslim radical movement. They were very clear about that in every report that I heard today.
Exactly, Therese, which is what I wanted to stress, because when people hear Chechnya, they're thinking about what happened with the various bombings and suicides that they had in that country, and they're linking it to the Islamic, the radicalization of Islam, as they call it, and Muslims, and they're trying once again to somehow or the other put Islam and Al-Qaeda and all of that into this mix with these boys. And
but you know, to be very fair, we can't discount it. The reason I'm doing the program today with this particular emphasis is to head it off at the pass. So when it comes up, you have a context. So, you know, you don't fall victim to exactly what you're pointing out. The idea is that you cannot erase the history, and particularly the recent history of Chechnya. You cannot de-link Chechnya from the Islamic movement. I mean, you can't. 95% of Chechnya is made up of Muslims, most of them Sunni. So to ignore it is like ignoring why the service yesterday was held at the Catholic Cathedral.
Exactly.
Boston is the seat of Catholic power, and you know, that's why when a thing as major as this is the political way of acknowledging power. So you can't ignore it, but you can at least understand it. And because you understand it, you become hopefully impervious to the, you know, to the blather out there when it does come up and is directed toward you.
Yeah, exactly. Because you want to make sure that you get everything, put it into the right context. But
that's correct.
One thing, what I was going to say also with what's coming up here with these boys and this so-called attack and this lockdown that they're doing for the city of Boston, is that from everything else that you are seeing, that I'm looking at with what's going on here in the news, and they finally went ahead and labeled this a terrorist and put the name terrorist on these boys. It's still,
Well, they're men, by the way. They're men.
Excuse me.
Both older than 18.
I thought one of them were 17.
No, one is 19 and one is 26.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Well, they're young men. Let me correct myself. I don't want to be stereotypically using a racist term to refer to them. But with all of this stuff that's going on, because, Therese, I don't see why it is that they would go and rob a 7-Eleven, as well-planned and well-thought of that these young men seem to have been, that they would go and rob a 7-Eleven, get into a gun battle with local law enforcement, and all of these things that they are throwing out here in the media. Therese, I'm going to say this and get offline. You're going to see that this is some or the other going to link right back into Iran, because don't forget Chechnya is one of those Eurasian countries that has link to all of those stands from Afghanistan, Turkmenistan, and all of those regions that comes right down into Iran. And I'm going to, you're going to find some way that it's going to end up coming back into Iran in order to get some route to get into Iran. You mark my word on this, that it's going to end up linking back into Iran.
Well, thank you for your contribution, Sarah. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Jay follows Sarah. Thank you, Jay, for being with us today.
Soon.
Hello.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes. Is this Jay or
yes,
Patricia?
Good afternoon.
You are Jay.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Great. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. you know, I'm sitting here. I'm chuckling hearing Miss Sarah's comments. And I think she's 100% correct in the sense that what I find a lot of people in my circle and even beyond, people lack the why nowadays. It seems like in our society, we've grown so accustomed to getting the news and having faith in what they're reporting that we kind of take it for granted that what they're saying is fact. But again, I find we're not asking enough of the why. Because I'm left with that same puzzlement. I don't see that, and I've listened over and over again. I'm like, I'm missing something. I don't see the connection between the shooting on the campus, the robbery at the 7-Eleven, and it baffles me to think if you have two suspects that you're pursuing, you manage to kill one. How did the other one manage to flee? You know, with all of the police that are in the area. You know, and then the other thing that I cannot understand, if you have such a puzzle with this one suspect and you manage to corner him, I don't understand why they would, I mean, you would have to subdue him in some form. You have to protect your well-being and the community's safety. I understand that. But why not bring him in so there can be more light shed on the why, because I cannot understand it. So now it's basically whatever it is the media wants to spoon feed the public, that's what we have to take, because
Jay, I mean, you have to be fair too. Here's a situation. They apparently started this. They initiated the action. Okay.
But why?
They end up, the why is not necessarily important right now. The fact is that they did it. They initiated this action, let's just say. Allegedly. All right? Allegedly, they initiated the action. When they were cornered in Watertown, they are smack in the middle of a neighborhood. The police don't know what they have or what they don't have. Whether they have explosives, and if so, what kind of explosives. They just don't know what's going on. But a gun battle ensues. I've covered enough gun battles to have way more questions than answers for them, because I know so many things can go wrong and so many things are suspicious. But let's just say in this scenario, you also have to consider, how do you take somebody in? You know, how do you do that? If you don't, in fact, the television showed the body in the street and the body's not moving, but nobody is letting their guns down. They still are aiming at the body for minutes and minutes.
Right.
When you and I would assume that the person is dead, but we are not trained in these matters. We don't know whether the person might be pretending to be dead, or maybe the person is seriously hurt, and maybe the person has explosives strapped to his body. You don't know. So, you know, the management of these kinds of issues and events, I mean, we're not trained in that area, so we don't know how to do that. But you know, the main thing, though, let me ask you, based on the short interview we had with Dr. Gerald Horn, did it fill in a couple of whys for you, the connection, in case this conversation should crop up? Do you think you have had a leg up on anticipating the discussion, and you feel a little bit better knowing what you might have to be thinking about when these things are coming at you?
I would have to say yes. I would have to say, and I thought, did I lose you?
No, not at all.
You know, I thought it was, I listened to your program yesterday, but I didn't really capture the whole connection between the Boston, the taxes, the MIT connection. But then when I heard MIT spoken of in the news, immediately, mm-hmm. it rang back to me. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know, so yes, I would say after hearing the doctor's assessment, yes, I would say yes.
You know, the thing is, we still don't know.
Right.
We don't know the particulars of what is going on. But when you are able, when you train yourself to say, at least I think you are in the right spot of asking the questions, it means that you're not accepting whatever is given to you 100%. You are still, you know, you're still independently weighing things. And that's exactly the way we ought to be as consumers of information.
Oh, sure. Because I cannot understand every, and I mean, of course, obviously people lie. People don't necessarily tell the truth, but I think it's very interesting. And I think it should be questioned. Everyone who worked with the young, the 19-year-old, whatever that the news is reporting about what he's done or alleged to have done, it's conflicting to the character that, you know, these people knew.
Mm-hmm.
So we have no idea who he was, or was it a front? Did he pretend to be this person, and all the while he was preparing such an act? You know, nobody knows. I just think it's a shame that, you know, you can't get firsthand account. And I understand what you're saying about the safety issue, but I kind of almost I see that this the younger brother, I strongly believe he will get killed. And again, we're not going to have the questions answered. We're going to have just mere speculation, what the police piece together, and we won't know what's fact. It's like the same thing that happened with the police officer who allegedly went rogue in California. It ended in a gun battle, and end of story, and that was it. And so, you know, it's just we never really get to hear, you know, what's the story behind this? Why?
But the good thing that we have is that this week, what we were able to do was to trace the cycle of a typical story like this, the cycle that it typically goes through. Are you following the rhythm of it? Are you following how it's progressing and where we are on the timeline?
Yeah.
It is now going to turn. Remember all the time I said so far, you know, the media would be playing a particular role. And now you see the tables turning already.
Yeah.
Now it's beginning to turn. But it was interesting. I thought about it, too, when I heard the MIT reference, because I said, you know, that to me occurred because I thought of the symbolism of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard it, I said, wow, this is interesting. Very interesting.
Very.
But thank you, Jay. Thanks for listening and contributing today.
Okay, have a good day.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Patricia, you up next. Hello.
Hello, Mutusan. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
A lot of my questions have actually been answered, and the main one that I had, I think, was answered by your first guest, because I could not make the connection between why were they taking out their whatever political statement they were making, what was the U.S. connection? But I think your first guest has answered that question for me. I think what I'm finding quite interesting right now, I mean, these two young men have literally have wreaked havoc on the town of Boston, and not only Boston. I mean, let's face it, Amtrak is not running down the eastern seaboard. People are sequestered in their homes. There's no movement. And yet still you don't hear the media characterizing these young men in the disparaging, demonic terms that we would usually expect to hear them associate with individuals who've connected these who have perpetrated these kinds of ills on a particular city. Usually they're called monsters. They're called all kinds of names, but they're describing them as being brilliant, going to this charter school in Boston. And I kept saying, who are they talking about? Are they talking about people who are who have just terrorized Boston?
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think they're trying to. They didn't know who these individuals were in the beginning, and as time is going on, and they're big. I think they think they're beginning to put the pieces together. I mean, let's face it, a lot of what we've seen lately have been people of European descent. Now, of course, when you see a white person, you don't know where they're from, but you assume that they were of European descent. And I think once they began to look into their background and found that they were going, you know, one is an engineer, one is a pre-med student, they haven't yet figured out how to spin it.
What did I say yesterday? Do you recall?
No, I was at the doctor's yesterday. I missed the show.
I mean, what are your priorities, going to the doctor or listening to this program? You have to set your priorities straight. Well, the thing I said yesterday was, I remarked about that, saying it would be interesting to find out how come they haven't shared the identity, although they had photographs and they couldn't decide whether these were, quote, real white people or ethnic white people.
Mm-hmm.
Or light-skinned Moroccans or Algerians. They couldn't quite
decide. They couldn't figure it out.
No, because they knew what they were not. They weren't dark enough to be
African. Yeah, they weren't brown
African.
Enough. We're not talking about the Black Liberation Army here.
So they held their tongues because they couldn't decide what it was that they were looking at. I said that yesterday.
Mm.
So you hit it on the head, because this was a paradox for them. And now today, where they refer to them as Chechens,
yes,
they were very careful still, because now as Gerald said, these are real white people. They come from the Caucasus,
mm-hmm.
where the word Caucasian comes from. These are real Caucasians. So the authorities are having a little problem, because they do not look like, quote, typical, unquote, Muslims.
Exactly.
So on a double level, on two levels, they pose something of an ethnic challenge to the authorities.
Exactly.
But things will change. Things will change. Thank you, Patricia, for calling today.
Thank you, Nell.
Thanks a lot. Well, we're coming to the end of our program, and I hope that that interview with Gerald Horn, he's going to be joining us again, talking about some other issues. But at least the point I'm wanting to make here is that this is in its initial stages. Just be very, very careful not to jump to conclusions, and look at things in context. Look at things in context. None of this is pretty at all. It's never a good time when you have to consider the violence that people visit upon others who have no reason to be attacked, and their lives taken and their limbs lost and the injuries inflicted on them at will. This is not, it's never a good thing at all. But we have to still see things in context. It's a great demand on logic and on your own sense of humanity to extend the courtesy of, let me see what this is before I make up my mind. But you have to do that, because the media now will be really pumped to control our thoughts, and by controlling our thoughts, controlling our actions as well. So I want to thank you for joining me today. I want also to remind you that this is not just a plain old listening audience. I need my audience to go to work. We have to grow PRN.FM and grow the audience as well to Lead Stories. Reach me at Lead Stories, LEID Stories @gmail.com, and on Facebook at Lead Stories with Patrice Lead. Have yourselves a great weekend, and we'll see each other Monday. Thank you. Bye-bye. Said you must have done. You must have done. Oh.
something wrong.